Hello, everyone, once again to PWT Talks NXT. This is our second recording of the night, so we're possibly going to be a little truncated, which is a bummer, but we recorded and found out some of our stuff wasn't up to date, so we're going to go ahead and do this again and try to stay engaged and remember what we have and haven't said on this version of the recording. So yeah, that'll be a fun adventure for us trying to remember what we said when. So you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com if you ever have any questions that you want us to tackle on the show or anything like that. I am Kelly Wells. I am your host. I also do the NXT tracker for The Torch, and I just wrote a piece on the Street Profits this last week, hyping them up right before their crushing defeat at the hands of AOP this week. That's me, but I've also got Harley Padgett with me.
Hello, my name is Harley R. Padgett. I cover Ring of Honor for Pro Wrestling Torch. This is our second episode of the night. We've already talked about all of this in depth, so let's do it again.
Let's indeed. And
forgive my yawns.
And we also have Tom Staup with us tonight.
Absolutely, at Tom Staup on Twitter, and I do the NXT tapings reports out of Full Sail. I reevaluated my math from a recent episode, and I believe that, you know, I said we had three episodes left. We clearly only have two before TakeOver, including the one that aired tonight. And I looked over my report again. I think they're going to be able to fit everything in. I think one of the major things that happened at the taping might end up actually having been a dark main event. So if we get a couple weeks in and that hasn't happened, then you can go check out the report to find out what it was. Although I guess if you don't know what it is, then you wouldn't know if it happened or not. So I'll talk about it here if it does or doesn't happen. I also will mention briefly that I cover the MLW events here in Orlando, and they are now officially TV tapings. They got a deal with BeIn, whatever BeIn is. It's a TV station somewhere, so they're going to be on it, and I am covering it for The Torch.
All right, Tom already did an intro that was four times longer than his intro last time, so this should be an interesting late night for us. We're going to go ahead and we're going to start with the introduction of the North American title, a secondary title for NXT. We think it's going to be secondary. It could be tertiary. We don't know what's happening with the UK title, and we'll cover that a little bit. We got all six of the people announced for the ladder match that we're going to have. That was what I was alluding to last week when I said I didn't know about this as a teaser, or as a spoiler when I went to a website that said non-spoiler, and it turned out to be a massive spoiler about one of the matches on the show. So we are going to have in this match EC3, who apparently is going to go by EC3, I don't think they're going to reference Ethan Carter as part of his name, Adam Cole, The Velveteen Dream, Lars Sullivan, Killian Dane, and Ricochet. Next week we will get Sullivan and Dane in a singles match. We got Sullivan this week. We're not going to cover that match because there's nothing to cover, but we are going to get these six in the match. So let's kind of try to do what we did last time and go through this first. Harley, what do you think of this match?
I'm sure the match is going to be one heck of a match. You got a ton of different styles here, right? You've got someone like Lars who's just going to clobber everybody, but then you've got Ricochet flying off of things. It's going to be a very interesting one to watch for sure. I'm thinking that Kelly has convinced me on prior episodes of this show that Adam Cole is probably going to win the match here. Lars and Killian, they've set up, have a rivalry, so I could see them taking each other out. Maybe Ricochet and Velveteen Dream in a feud. That kind of makes sense to me and could be a nice introductory feud for Ricochet. So Adam Cole winning the title kind of makes a lot of sense. I feel like this is kind of usurping the role where we thought the UK title was going to be. So what this means for the UK title is interesting, remains to be seen. But I will note that on WWE.com, and I mean even in the name of the title, it's the WWE UK title, not the NXT UK title. And on WWE.com Superstars page, the UK title and Pete Dunne are lumped right up there with the Bar and the Usos and Charlotte, not with the NXT people. So I don't know what that means for the UK belt going forward. I kind of thought a while ago that maybe they would do some sort of 205 Live UK joint show where you get both of those divisions in that 1 hour. But I don't know.
Yeah, and I think this has been an ever-present question on our show, is what the heck is the UK title? We're not quite sure. It's a WWE title that happens on NXT and has five guys in the division, and most of the time they're not on TV other than Pete Dunne. It's a really, really totally undefined title and division completely. And who knows, maybe when Trent Seven was put up in this tournament, he didn't even know it. He was like, oh my God, am I booked? Like, what's going on? But it was just this tournament that he was never meant to be in. So I don't know what that title is going to be. But I have high hopes for the North American title. I could see this being kind of their intercontinental title. And the way that NXT is always booked so well, I think that we could go to the heyday of the Intercontinental title, guys like Perfect and Brett, and kind of reigns on that level. But I think we might start with our Miz here. I am going to go ahead and I'm going to predict Cole in this match. I think that is the natural progression of what he's been doing, kind of finally winning some matches, getting closer to a 500 record on the show. And I think this is the perfect way for him to, I think he should win that title, and then he can be a guy who loses and it doesn't necessarily matter because he's got his title. I'm not a guy who loves champions losing in title matches, but champions that are meant to be Miz-like, that's something that they can do. Those are losses they can absorb, and then they can keep themselves over. I don't know that he talks as well as Miz. That's a high standard. It still feels weird to me to say that, considering how green he was at one point. But that is a lofty expectation. But I feel like Cole is the right guy in that role right now. Tom, on this ladder match.
I, too, am going all in on Cole and Undisputed Era as a whole, walking out, each of them with a belt around their waists. I would say Dream is my dark horse in the match. Yes, either way, probably parlaying into a feud with Ricochet. Not only is that a good landing spot for Ricochet to have a storyline following his in-ring debut, but the groundwork's already been laid on Twitter for that. Not that that's the be-all, end-all, but it's already there. People who have been paying attention to it are already invested. As far as this, the episode goes in the presentation, I thought it was a fun presentation, not only with the initial announcement, but also with the little backstage segments throughout the night. Everything was amusing. Regal seemed sprightly. And we got all six announced. They had a little bit of a clever editing bit. As I've mentioned before, we don't see much of the backstage stuff, if any of it, depending on the night at the tapings. So we definitely did not see, although it was announced to the live crowd, we did not see the backstage segment with Ricochet being announced. So they captured some audio somewhere of a crowd chanting Ricochet and laid that over top of it, and that came off pretty well. But it also can't gloss over the fact that this was the weekly TV in-ring debut, obviously, but debut of EC3. And I feel like it went well. And I'm saying that as someone who my time of paying attention to Impact Wrestling and TNA doesn't really cross over with his era of being prolific there. So I've just caught little bits and pieces. I most recently caught the clips of his Feast or Fired, which were done in a tongue-in-cheek, like, yeah, we know that everybody knows that he's going to NXT kind of way. And it was amusing, just in a capsule all in and of itself, not looking at it in the greater context of Impact Wrestling. I thought he made a good impression on the microphone. He sounded very suave and smooth and takes himself very seriously. So I'm trying to have an open mind about this guy and not think of him with sort of like an Impact Wrestling stigma. And I'm just as excited as everyone else probably is about this official mid-card title coming in. Kelly, you referenced the heyday of the Intercontinental title, and there's an argument to be made and that has been being made that the NXT title right now is basically our modern-day version of that. And now there's an actual mid-card title in NXT for these people to wrestle for in this promotion that really focuses around more like, yeah, sure, we had Louis, whose name I always forget, Louis something, burning his eyebrows off, but very rarely do they
Marcus
do.
Marcus Louis, yeah.
Thank you. Right. Yes, that sounds correct. With Sylvester Lefort, so yes, that was silly, but they very rarely go to that territory, and so having another title to build these feuds around in a sports-like environment, the sports-like environment that NXT is, makes a lot of sense to me. And not only do we have a ripe mid-card to wrestle for it, but I could, thinking way ahead, also see this being sort of a consolation prize for someone like a Cassius Ohno, maybe down the road if we feel like, maybe he won't end up on the main roster. Maybe he won't end up getting too much more of a prolific spot. But give him a little bit of a run with the title, and maybe that'll appease some fans and make us feel like he at least got a little bit of something before transitioning into a backstage role.
Yeah, and we've seen those kind of consolation prizes for people before. Certainly in titles, I would say basically 90% of the Intercontinental title reigns of the Attitude Era were consolation prizes. Hey, we'll give you 2 weeks with the title, and then we can call you a former champion. Hopefully that's not the way this is going to go. I could see Ohno being a transitional, I was going to say face champion, but maybe he'll be a heel by that point. We don't know exactly what the future of Ohno is going to be. He's not really in the mix doing anything right now other than having good matches and typically not coming out on the winning end. So, I liked what EC3 did early on in the show. I think he's okay on the mic, and I think he's very, very good as an improviser. So that part of his mic game is great. So, looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing how this they can really latch on to the silly part of him, or they can latch on to the serious part of him. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing, because having somebody being silly, you can be that guy and you can stay employed for a long time. But they're going to make money with a serious character, typically speaking. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with EC3. But we were all pretty much on board with saying Cole feels like the right winner to this match. Sullivan, Dane have their thing. They're going to wrestle next week. And I think we agree they'll take each other out of this match. Ricochet will probably get some hope spots up there, almost grabbing the title. But we've seen them start their Twitter feud, which sounds so stupid, but Omega and Jericho started their feud on Twitter, and it was glorious. So this won't be that, but it'll be good. And then we got EC3 and Cole left over, and it just feels like I think they could go either way and have this work, and those title reigns could be very, very similar to one another, but it feels like that this is the right thing for Cole, unless he goes up. And if he doesn't win, I do think he'll go up. That's my pointless prediction of the week. We're always wrong about these, but if he doesn't win, I think he's going up. So
on the EC3 front, I kind of think Jericho's kind of a good way for him to model that balance of comedy and seriousness.
Yeah, Jericho has been able to reinvent himself enough during every run. He's so talented because there are so many faces of Chris Jericho. And I really, really like that every time he comes back, he's doing something different. Like he had the time when he was a heel, but he was talking lowly and quietly and was just very cold. We had this version, this heel version, that which was very silly, and a hanger-on to another guy. We saw him play the sidekick role, which he hadn't really done any time recently, but it worked for both guys involved, of course, and then he worked face. Yeah, that would be, if EC3 can model himself after Jericho, I don't think he's going to have any problems having a great, great career. So,
And this is a huge intro for EC3 and Ricochet to debut in a title match on a takeover. That right. says a lot about what they view of these two guys.
Right. And they don't have to win for that to be a big deal. Well, obviously, both of them can't win. Somebody's going to lose their first match on the show. But I think being in this match is going to do them a lot more favors than some kind of opening enhancement match will do. I assume neither guy is wrestling next week. Tom would already know, and he doesn't have to tell us. I don't feel like it would be a huge spoiler to say, yes, one of them gets an enhancement match. But I'm going to say that they're probably going to hold off for the show, and then they can break out their fun stuff during this ladder match, which is part of a multi-gimmick match show, if you want to count non-sanctioned as a gimmick. And I don't know, it probably is a gimmick as far as NXT level standards go, because they don't usually do stuff like that, but we're seeing a little more of it lately.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
The only thing with the new title, even setting the UK title aside, you got four championships in NXT now. Generally speaking, every championship has been defended on every takeover. So that's my only big concern, I guess, going forward is this might be the last of the five-match era takeovers. Because otherwise, I mean, if you're looking ahead to June, we have four title matches. That only leaves room for one non-title match on the card. That's not a lot of wiggle room.
Right. And that, you know, that's a distinct possibility. And one thing, while it may be a reasonable question to ask, like, what the heck is going on with the UK title with them introducing, you know, the North American title, which I guess I would also point out that they did not bring up the history of any other titles that shared that name. So I unless they incorporate that going forward, as they've done with the United States title on the main roster, I think we can say that this is a completely brand new title, despite having an historic name. You know, we've talked in the past about how the UK title might end up being sort of a mid-card title on NXT, but it doesn't seem to be going that way, even with Americans competing for it, because Regal really hit that regional point tonight. But because he stressed the UK title and he listed off the people in the division, at least most of them, if not all of them, it actually makes me think that they probably have a plan, maybe something that we'll see come to fruition within the next 6 to 12 months for the UK title. Because why introduce a new one if they already had something that would have filled that slot? So I actually, this announcement, while it does throw that into question, it actually makes me a little more optimistic that they might actually have a plan, whether it's incorporating it into 205 or whether it's giving it its own show on the network, which I think was the original thought. We'll see, but I'm optimistic that the UK title is not going anywhere.
Yeah, and if they were planning on letting it go, they could let it quietly die. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that we saw a title quietly die, or you know, they could throw it in the garbage and then Midian could find it 6 months later.
Here's something that I just had an idea to check WWE.com. May 14th, Monday Night Raw in London, England. May 15th, SmackDown in London, England. June 8th, NXT at the Download Festival in Derby, England.
Oh, yeah.
So if there were a time to do something big with the UK title or shake things up, you'd figure while they're in the UK would be the time to do it, right?
Yeah. It seemed like maybe they were going to matriculate the UK title onto the main show for a very short time when Pete Dunne came up and was cheered vociferously for slaughtering Enzo Amore. It seemed like maybe that was going to be part of the main show, but then bizarrely, that was a week where I didn't have the time to see Raw, like to fit it in, but I did have the time to see Hulu Raw, and it left out the Dunne Enzo match, and I'm like, far be it for me to want to see Enzo, but I really, really wanted to see Dunne hammer the crap out of him. When they leave somebody out like that, it typically is kind of a hint that maybe that's not on the radar, like that's not going to be a major thing. Like,
yeah, it wasn't an important segment,
right? Like they did this last week or the week before, whatever it was, where they decided the entirety of the deletion was not on the Hulu. That's what was left out, was the main event deletion segment. It's an interesting way watching Hulu to see what they do and don't think is important, but. Yeah, I guess we'll see if this is the time for that title, because I loved that tournament, like I love every tournament, but would love to see where that's headed. That is the North American title. Main story, I think. Tommaso versus Johnny. We got a small step forward here toward the unsanctioned match, where I'm sure a lot of you listeners thought this was going to go just as we did. The added wrinkle that we did not see coming is that the loser leaves town and Johnny can actually win his job back. This leaves us with a very strange position. I feel like this is a match neither guy can lose. We've seen matches like this that neither guy can lose before. I call it the you cannot pick the wine. Clearly, I cannot pick the wine in front of me match, because neither guy can.
The wink award?
Yeah, the wink award. Neither guy can lose this match, it seems like. Now, we have some theories about what they could do here. Small backstage segment here. Oh, I got to remember to read our email again. So let me pull up that email, and Harley, go ahead with what you thought about this.
Yeah, we kind of expected Ciampa Gargano, some sort of unsanctioned street fight. So I like that. But the stipulation definitely changes things up, because if Johnny wins, he's back in NXT. And we would think that's not going to happen. We just had this big farewell to him. We said goodbye. We shed our tears. It's over. But I don't know. I mean, there are far worse things than Johnny Gargano coming back to NXT. I kind of love the idea of maybe Almas somehow retains his NXT title, and then the following week he's celebrating the ring with Vega and Gargano walks out and they just can't take it. They just lose their minds that he's back and he's there to bother them again and again. or you get some sort of feud. His feud with Ciampa continues for another little while, and you get some back and forth with them. But the scenario I hit upon on a previously lost episode of this podcast is the idea that Gargano wins, he gets his job back, but then he comes out on NXT and he says, you know what, I spoke to Daniel Bryan yesterday and he actually offered me a job on SmackDown. And as much as I love NXT, I'm going to take it. But thank you so much for your support. And it means so much to me that I'm leaving NXT because I want to and of my own volition, not because Andrade or Tommaso are forcing me out the door.
Yeah, I'm in love with this as an idea. I really like I like the fact that Johnny can save some face because I know that some fans turned on him with the losses and things like that, which is unfortunate because he ended up having to be in a position where he had to end up taking this loss because he was not intended to be the next champion or anything like that. But I really dig that. I am going to read an email here from Michael McGivern, a first-time mailer, I think. He gave us this one. I don't get this storyline that Johnny Gargano isn't allowed at full sale. Why? Because he's not on the active roster? Does that mean that other beloved NXT alums like Finn Balor and Chad Gable are banned too? I know where Michael's going with this question, but I will say that a couple of things. One, Johnny obviously jumped the railing and slaughtered Tommaso Ciampa and everything like that, and he went after him like that. Obviously, that would be... We'd all be in trouble for that if we were to... If Tom jumped the ramp, he would not be booked in a match with Ciampa, but he would definitely be taken, escorted out of the arena. But I get what he's saying. So, but if Johnny was to show up and just watch from the audience, I would still be in favor of them saying he can't be here, he can't be here, just to further this as the means to an end. And I know that's maybe a little strong, but I would be in favor of them doing that. Tom, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, the added wrinkle really it's a conundrum now because boy, I guess now I'm trying to think of who I would have predicted previously. I guess it would be easy to say that Johnny should get the feel good win, although I still have one foot firmly planted in believing that Johnny was done with NXT. So just, you know, come back to me next week and I might have a prediction for you. But right now it's definitely become an even more interesting storyline. Not that it needed anything extra, but it somehow found that other level. And even though the writing was on the wall, we pretty much knew that this was the direction that they were going. I still got amped up hearing it become official. It's going to be extremely exciting to see these two throw down again, especially now that there is this. I mean, it's a long-awaited confrontation now. Their CWC match was absolutely incredible, and there was so much emotion and a little bit of I don't want to say resentment, but you know, competition, and then maybe a little bit of post-match resentment from Ciampa having gotten beaten, and you know, they got past that, but there was clearly something there bubbling under the surface, and they have gone long form with this story, and it has been paying off so far. So whether this is the blow off or whether they continue it a little bit like Harley suggested, man, it's just been one of the most incredible stories that we've seen in recent WWE history.
Yeah, this has been good stuff, and I don't know. I didn't mention this last time, but I think that the fact that Johnny lost in the first place and was sent off before they could do this match, I feel like the stipulation, this loser leave town, the stipulation for the match that we're going to see was probably added on to add stakes to what was already a really heavy match. And it makes me feel like that was an audible, adding that on to really, really add doubt to the match. But I could have seen Gargano winning this, but I feel like Gargano is also the kind of guy who would do business. If he's going to leave, then he does business. He loses to the guy that that is going to be around. That is what most of them have done outside of Asuka, because they decided to preserve her undefeated streak. But I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it, as I am the lot of TakeOver. So yeah, we'll see where that heads. We also had the Dusty Classic this week. We got both semifinal matches. All things considered, they were not long matches. The Profits versus AOP match, I believe we determined it was 2 minutes and 41 seconds. Yeah, very, very short match. A very poor way, I thought, for the Profits to take the loss. Not a good look for them. It is only their second loss, and both of them have been to AOP, so they'll bounce back, but kind of made them look perhaps a little silly in this match. We knew once Strong and Dunn were announced, we knew what this final was going to be, but this, I thought this match would get more time. Tom, you had some interesting thoughts concerning what happened after this match live. Go ahead.
Yeah, the camera didn't focus on it quite as much as I might have liked it to, just based on how I was feeling and where my focus was live in the arena. But Montez Ford was really selling the frustration just in his body language and on his face, and we did see a little bit of that on the screen. It even maybe I was just really invested in it, especially because, yeah, I was hoping for a longer, more competitive match than even that we had seen from them when they went up against AOP previously. Didn't get that. Ford's antics really, really cost them. And I think he's we discussed it with their heavy machinery match, that his antics earned them a bit of a disadvantage from the onset, and they overcame. But this time it like really cost them the match. So in the arena, my focus was so much on Ford, because I was having trouble figuring out what is his body language conveying right now? Is he frustrated with himself for costing them the match, or is he frustrated with Dawkins for not having been able to handle himself while he was the legal man? So obviously none of that culminated in any sort of way any sort of conflict that I personally wouldn't have voted for. Was I on any kind of decision committee there? But it definitely made me think that at least this should, maybe it has to be a turning point for the Profits, in the sense that nothing dramatic in their presentation at all, but maybe the antics are confined to pre and post match. And during the match, they're like, you know what, we're going to put down the cup and we're going to focus on the action at hand, because we've learned our lesson now.
Yeah, and I definitely don't want to see an end to the Profits here. I do definitely want to see a Montez Ford singles push at some point. I am a huge fan. I went off about how much I like him in the Street Profits NXT tracker that I put up last week that went up on the Torch. And I don't need it to be right away, because Dawkins has really worked his ass up, and I really want to see something good come of this for him. I don't want him to be left in the lurch just because he's got a partner who's a promising singles prospect. I would love to take see these guys take a little more time and continue to win some matches, and yeah, keep them down in NXT maybe for a little longer. I'm sure that's very frustrating for Dawkins, who has been there for a very long time, but he's on the right path now. This is working for him, and hopefully he is advocating behind the scenes, like, okay, let's not split this team up before we've done everything we can.
Do you love wrestling? Are you in or around New Orleans during WrestleMania weekend? Then come check out Ring Rust Radio Live from the Hilton Garden Inn New Orleans Convention Center on Saturday, April 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. local time. Tickets are only $10 and available on PayPal via ringrustradio@gmail.com. or on patreon.com/ringrustradio. Don't miss the boys of Ring Rust Radio.
Harley, what'd you think of this?
Yeah, going into this, I thought Street Profits have a ton of potential. They're getting over with the fans. They can easily slot into, you know, Raw or SmackDown eventually. Not right now. In terms of work rate, they still have a bit of a ways to go. But character-wise, tons of teams they can bounce off of on the main roster. So a split between now and then does not make sense to me. But Montez Ford really looked like a chump here tonight just by not taking this match seriously. I went in thinking maybe there's a chance Street Profits will win. They'll pull off the upset simply because Authors of Pain going past the first round didn't really make sense to me. I thought there's no way they win this thing. There's no way they go to the finals. They've already done everything there is to do in NXT. They've already literally won this tournament last time. So when Montez confronted Paul Ellering at ringside, my first thought is, okay, he's going to like throw his drink in Paul's face. That's going to fluster him. Akram and Rezar throw a fit because they're insulted. And then Dawkins pulls off a surprise schoolboy and gets the 1-2-3. Big upset win. I kind of was thinking Street Profits might win the whole tournament. I sound so foolish now when they lost in 2.5 minutes. But AOP and Sanity being foreign take champions didn't make sense to me that either of them would win. And Roddy and Dunn weren't even announced for the tournament initially. So Street Profits were kind of my, well, they're the only team left that makes sense. And now none of the teams left make a ton of sense, but we'll get to that when we discuss the other match.
Right. This was, I don't know. I actually didn't see much of this match. Not that much of this match is even a statement you can say, but I didn't. I was looking down making notes because I make a lot of notes during the show, and typically I can safely, for the first minute and a half of a match, write notes, and it's not a problem. Or I can just wait for the first commercial, which in this one obviously never came. But I was taking notes. I finally look up, and it's the Ellering spot with Ford on the outside, and I'm like, well, it can't be the finish. They just got to this point. So I didn't see really any grappling. I just saw the last chapter, the finish. Not great for the Profits. Hopefully they'll bounce back right after WrestleMania. Not that long ago, I would have said, hey, maybe it's time for the main roster for these guys, but it does not seem like that's in the cards for these guys just yet, because I think they would have, if they were moving up anytime soon, I feel like they would have at least had a good showing before biting the bullet in this match. So the other semifinal match we had was Sanity versus Roderick Strong and Pete Dunne. Main event, decent enough match, maybe a okay match with a hot-ish finish that I feel like the announcers no-sold. They did this combination of finisher leading into the bitter end. Sorry, I'm starting to get these titles of finishing moves mixed up, but I think that's right. The bitter end.
It's all right. The announcers do sometimes as well.
Yeah, that's true. Morrow's pretty good about it, but every now and then you'll hear those guys screw them up. They kind of no-sold it, and it was like, okay, I'm sitting here marking out. Like, that's a combination finisher. And they didn't call it out, so I was like, I guess maybe I'm wrong about what they were doing there. But sure enough, that was the 1-2-3 on, I think they did it on Alexander Wolf. No, they didn't.
No, it was EY.
It was actually Eric.
Yeah. Wolf took the end of heartache.
And for some reason in my head, I was putting Dane in the match, which obviously he wasn't. But yeah, so we had Sanity versus Strong done, the longest match on a show with three very not-so-long matches. And we got the finale that I think we all thought we were probably going to get. So, Tom, what'd you think of this main event?
Yeah, well, of course, I loved the combination, the assisted bitter end. It was strange to hear the announcers not talk about it, but I feel like it continues that story of Roddy and Pete learning how to work together as a tandem. And so I really dug that. Not only that, it looks cool. And the main thing that really occurred to me, because the action in the match didn't give me too much to go off of. Sanity, their MO right now seems to be kind of slowing things down to their pace, tagging in and out and isolating, but it's somewhat methodical. before the opponent does or doesn't come back, I suppose. But the main thing that occurred to me was that perhaps this is why that right side of the bracket was so arguably weak compared to the left side, because they had planned to put these two guys together who weren't previously a tag team, and they didn't want to put them up against more credible opponents that, you know, by having them run through these teams would then in turn make the tag division look a little bit weaker. You know, you can have them go over Lorcan and Birch. You can even at this point have them go over Sanity, and it doesn't really hurt it doesn't really discredit the tag division.
Yeah, Sanity's win-loss record is not exactly sparkling if you look at the entirety of their work, and that's fine because they have one of those mystique, I don't know, I feel like they're a modern-day brood where they're really over and you believe in them as a faction, and then they go out there and they lose almost all the time, and it doesn't matter. Like, nobody even notices that they're losing all the time, and that's kind of what the Brood's deal was as well, so... and they didn't lose as much as the Brood. I want to get that clear. I mean, the Brood almost never won at all. But yeah, the same sort of feel that they can keep themselves over. I do think it's interesting, the idea. I agree with the idea that the right side of the bracket was definitely built that way so they had an out for these guys who were not a team to win because they weren't building established teams. But in order to keep them over, you can't call that out. You can't. The announcers can't say, well, they had an easy ride to the finals, whereas AOP had to have the harder road. So, yeah, it kind of puts them in a weird position where they book it that way so you notice, but they can't call it out and make you notice too much because then egos get hurt. I don't know. But I definitely agree with that idea of it's a little odd when – well, the first one of these tournaments – we ended up with two makeshift teams, right? Because Finn and Joe were the winners, and I want to say they beat...
Baron Corbin and Rhino.
Okay, Corbin was the one I couldn't come up with, which is odd that I remembered Rhino, but...
I'm looking at the brackets right now.
Okay.
And this was the thing, is I like tag team wrestling, so I find it insulting when you have Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong, who have known each other for a month. This is only their second match teaming together, and yet they're instantly better than all these established tag teams, all these teams that travel together and train together and room together and, you know, practice double team maneuvers. And these two guys who barely know each other can just waltz in and beat them all. And that was my thing with the first Dusty Classic. I'm looking at the brackets here. Baron Corbin and Rhino made it to the end. You look at that now. Rhino is enhancement talent on Raw these days, and this was only 2 years ago. But not only did they make it to the finals, Corbin and Rhino beat The Ascension, DIY, and American Alpha.
Right. Oh, boy.
That's
yeah,
so bizarre to think that. those are three of the best – like most winningest teams in the history of NXT.
And I guess that got him over his heels, and it definitely made me care. I was definitely very worried that they were going to go over. I really, at the time, disliked Baron Corbin. And I'm not like his biggest supporter now by any means, but at the time he was very green, and he was just more of an idea at the time, and not really a worker on the level of what he's doing now. So, but yes, it's the tournament puts them in weird positions because makeshift teams have to be in them to fill out the card. But yeah, it was booked in a way that I think that was obvious that we were going to get to this match, and I'm looking forward to this match. Tom has already seen it. I believe it was the main event of the show, other than his possible main event dark match, which he'll stop vague booking about tell us about it next week. But otherwise, I believe it was the main event and probably will be the main event of the television show proper. So there you go. That is our tournament, AOP versus Strong and Dunne. And I guess we'll see where that's headed. I personally think Strong and Dunne are going to win because these are the kind of guys you need to have on TakeOver right now, I think. But maybe they will go for the unlikely. I mean, AOP is, you would never pick against them, but it is unlikely to me that they would have the same team win two out of the first three tournaments of this type. So whatever that is, I guess we'll find out next week. We also got a small step forward, I don't know, maybe a big step forward, in the Almas and Black feud backstage. This is really the first time that Almas has dominated Aleister Black on in a big setting. So that was odd. Did a little bit of water torture to him before taking him to the ring.
A little bit of Clockwork Orange there.
Yeah, right. Got a little bit of that, so not quite as disturbing. I feel like they're not there yet, but maybe we'll get the wide open eyes next week. Maybe that's still to come. let's hope not. I don't know. Unfortunately, this did interrupt a Dakota Kai match. I would just say NXT, think about that person out there who is the biggest Dakota Kai fan who is upset by this. That person, by the way, is me. I was very bummed out that we didn't get our Dakota Kai match, but hey, she hightailed it. She got some screen time. That's not a bad thing. And she didn't lose. So there you go. But Almas and Black, we stepped forward with them. We did get an email that I love from the Stuart Sutcliffe of PWT Talks NXT. That's Andrew Gamble. For the 10 people out there who knew who Stuart Sutcliffe is, that's an awesome reference.
On our first run through of this episode, we made awesome A-team references, but now I'm lost on this one.
he's the fifth Beatle.
Okay.
So there you go. More of an observation than a question, but I'm really excited for the title match at TakeOver. If you remember, Black made his NXT debut at last year's Pre-Mania TakeOver, defeating Almas. This was just a few months before Zelina Vega was paired with Almas, and his character really took a turn for the better. It's been cool to see the path both guys have taken over the last year. On a side note, I'm from Chicago, and as of now, I'm planning on attending TakeOver there in June, so I'll be sure to try and give some live feedback from the event. I'll tell you what, Andrew, I hope to do that as well, because I may end up being at TakeOver Chicago. And if I am, I'll give you a high five or whatever it is people do when they meet each other for the first time. Yeah, looking forward to that. I also will say I did not remember that these guys debuted at this very fitting time, the same show last year. If you had asked me who did Black face when he first came in, I probably would have come up with the name of Almas, but I guess I wasn't thinking of how fitting this is. Now, this puts NXT in a weird position because they can't call it out, because we're supposed to really, really, really want to see Aleister Black beat Almas for the title. And if you call out the fact that he did buzz through him one time, then you're not doing the current feud any favors. But I think that is a fantastic little addition to this match. And I don't know. I think it's cool. And I hope they mention it in some kind of small way next week. And if not, then at least we know that it happened, and we enjoy that. So
yeah. Black could make the reference next week.
Right.
Like, you guys are sitting on the top of the world because you jumped me in the parking lot from behind and beat me up. 1 year ago, I beat you on TakeOver, and I'm going to do it again this Saturday.
There you go. That's perfect. Any other thoughts? Go ahead, Harley, since you have the floor on this segment.
I just like that it really humanized Aleister. We've seen him get the short end of the stick from Undisputed Era before, but it was kind of a 3-on-1 scenario. This is the first time that he kind of just got whooped by somebody else. And sure, Almas jumped him from behind, but we've seen other people jump from behind, and after 30 seconds of brawling, they regain the upper hand. This was completely one-sided. From the parking lot to the ring, Aleister didn't get a single bit of offense in. So I like that. I like that it, you know, makes him look more vulnerable and makes us question, hey, can he pull this off? Can he win the title? Or I don't know. Some of us thought Gargano was going to win the title last time, and Andrade surprised us, so you can't count that guy out anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I was just going to say, we definitely have counted him out before, and not only has he soared, he was invited to the Royal Rumble, had a very long stop in the ring, and I would say looked really, really good in there. They're high on Almas right now in a way that they weren't, and I know that Vega is a big part of that, but he has definitely done his part, held up his side of the bargain. I love this act, and there's a lot of thank, I don't know what I want to say, a lot of credit to go around to both of them and to whoever decided to make this booking miracle. Tom, go ahead.
Yes, and carrying on from that, obviously Almas had a history prior to NXT, but we've just seen so much growth and refinement during this title run that I have really been enjoying it. And I know I'm on record on this show saying that if he had lost it earlier on, I think it was when we were building to the most recent takeover, that it might be in contention for one of the worst title runs ever, because it didn't feel super significant, and it was still a little bit of a head scratcher, like, man, why they went with that guy over Drew, really? But now at this point, I'm all on board the Almas train, and I think it's been an excellent investment, to the point where unless they do something crazy in a backstage segment next week that changes my mind, I'm all in on Almas retaining here. This particular segment, I thought it was executed perfectly well. It was actually, as much as it would have been fun to see a Dakota Kai match, it was executed in a sort of fun way in the arena. They just put it up on the screen because clearly something was going on, and there was that little, like, oh, okay, you know, this was a pre-tape, wait a second, no, I think this might actually be live. And then they come bursting through that door, and sure enough, it was going on live. And so, for as well done as the segment was, though, and I like that Almas set the trap last week and sprung it this week and succeeded, I actually think that Andrew's observation of the cyclical poetry of the journey that these guys have been on over the past almost 365 days is even that much more of a selling point. So I do hope that they at least make some kind of reference to that. But I'm not sure if I'm any more excited for this match now than I was prior to this episode, but it will sure be interesting to watch, I suppose, just as any other NXT title match would be.
Indeed.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
And we have, you know, we had a little debate about what could be the main event of this show. I think they're going to play it straight with the title match, just because when you have a lot of options to be the main event, you typically fall back on the title. But I really think that just about everything they've booked has some kind of claim to be the main event here. I don't want to see a secondary title go above it, although a six-man ladder match, which has never happened there, that's the kind of match that could maybe be an exception. But I really think they could go a lot of ways here, and that's the way WrestleMania has kind of been a little bit lately, where sometimes you're not quite sure, and especially when there's a guy like Roman Reigns, like, all bets are off, like, he might get that match, whether or not that's the best way to go or not. So it's, I think that's a good question.
Right, anyway. Yeah, what's the lasting visual that you want as you go off the air? Is it Johnny getting his job back, or is it Alistair standing tall after, you know, coming out victorious, or, you know, whatever it may be? Obviously, maybe, that's not my prediction, but I would feel like that would be a justification for it going on last.
Maybe it's War Machine showing up and destroying some people.
I'm on board with that. I definitely fell in love with them because I do watch some New Japan. I wish I could stay more up to date, but there's just so much damn wrestling to watch. New Japan, definitely spent some time watching some War Machine stuff there, and it'll be interesting. I know we've talked about this before, seeing if they supplant how much this hurts Heavy Machinery. A team of two guys that are big but not as big as War Machine, and they have Machine in their name, but it's not as cool a name as War Machine. So we'll see what happens with these two acts going forward. So the one other thing we had was a segment for TM61 that bled into an Ember Shayna segment, because this show has been very good about giving a little bit of screen time to every feud. Which is odd, because on the main roster, you got 2 and 3 hour shows that sometimes don't find a way to hype certain matches. This one hyped every single one that we've got booked. So really well done, and would just mention also that I really, really like the realism of an interview or whatever that segment is, a pre-planned segment going into, oh my God, something newsworthy is happening, and we gotta move the cameras over here and watch this. They were fairly good at this during the Attitude Era, and I think NXT has done a really, really good job of it, of making these segments feel like this is taking place in a real place, in reality, I guess, is really what I'm looking for. Obviously, kayfabe is dead, but I really, really like touches like this.
It was like something out of a Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Gosh, I wonder why you'd say that. Yeah, I promise not to go on my full rant here, but I went in depth on it the first time we attempted this episode. This reminded me of a scene from Paul Thomas Anderson's first feature, Hard Eight. If you've seen it, you know which one I'm talking about. Probably a scene in the diner with John C. Reilly and Philip Baker Hall. The scene is completely focused on them having a conversation. But then out of nowhere, you notice this other little conflict that happens at another booth, a couple booths down, and the camera just like goes over to it real quick, and somebody storms out of the restaurant, and then we go right back to the conversation that was our focus. Obviously, in this segment, we didn't go back to the conversation, but this felt cinematic in that sense. You're focused on TM61, but you can see Shayna giving it to Sarah Amato in the background, and you're a little bit, your eye keeps drifting over there, and then this conflict boils over, and the camera has to go focus on that. I really, really enjoyed how that was done, and I think it's an excellent, excellent example of how the Performance Center is one of, if not the best, locations that WWE returns to now. It feels like a place that you could walk into, and that's exactly what it would be like in there, as opposed to these really more, honestly, surreal backstage environments that we get on the main roster with all the lit curtains with hovering posters and people watching TVs sideways and everybody standing in neat rows and so on and so forth. This felt like a real place. So I very much dug how that was done.
Yeah. I think another good example is in basketball, when Matt and Trey are talking in the front and their little friend Squeak is being crucified in the back, because obviously Matt and Trey, very similar filmmakers to Paul Thomas Anderson. So, you know, their early work. So
they're all rip on me 13 or 14 more times.
Oh, so you have seen basketball. Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, they like to do drunken DVD commentary, which, you know, very similar to our show in many ways. But
especially on the second run through at 11:45 at night.
Yeah. We don't do the wink commercials anymore, but I could do one right now, and I wouldn't be lying. I promise you.
On the note of the world building and stuff, because it is an interesting topic. I had the same reaction with the opening. We've seen people pull up in the parking lot and walk into the arena and they get stopped for questioning. We see that on Raw and all sorts of places. But there's just something about the Ciampa Regal interaction with it was sunny and there was wind blowing. You could see their hair blowing and their clothes ruffling in the wind. And I was like, wow, this just feels so much more genuine. This feels like two human beings having a conversation outside of their place of work. It doesn't feel like two high school actors reading their lines in front of a green screen which is how so many of the interactions on Raw and SmackDown feel a lot of times.
Yeah, it wasn't overproduced.
And the same with Kathy Kelly. We saw her walking around backstage. She happened to run into Regal, and she chatted with Regal a bit. All of that, this kind of, I don't know where it started at NXT, but Billy and Peyton did this a lot, where they'd be watching somebody in the background and then narrating over Asuka at the performance center in the gym and things like that. They used to always be walking around narrating their own videos.
Right. And right. That's right.
It would be kind of a fun addition if they established a couple different sort of main settings, in the same way that when you watch a sitcom, you know, there's generally the home scene, the work setting, the whatever. But if NXT established some kind of commissary or in addition to the gym and stuff, you could set up a couple different more storylines and developments that way, right? Because and that makes everybody feel more real. Like, obviously, Ricochet eats food at some point. Obviously, EC3 does something when he's not in the ring. Where are these people? How do these people interact backstage?
That's actually a really good point. Like, sitcoms establish that kind of thing. Like, in Scrubs, they have the cafeteria. In Frasier, they have the coffee shop, so on and so forth.
Yeah, and how do people... It's very, very rare on pro wrestling that we get to see people interact with other people on the roster if they're not in a direct storyline at that moment. And why does that have to be the case? Why can't it be, you know, why can't we see Ricochet and Street Profits hanging out in the cafeteria eating lunch together without it leading to a story right now?
Right.
Yeah, the Attitude Era, that was probably one of the things they were best at, was showing guys being a little more real in the back. Now, I don't necessarily need to see Val Venis standing next to the Big Show in the urinal saying, I thought they called you the Big Show. And then Big Show, you know, throwing his head into the wall. But yeah, these little interactions in the back. God, what a weird one to call out of my memory. But that's the one. That's the one that
I know
came
the reference.
You do? Okay, so I'm not crazy.
It was a GTV special.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
I figured that was probably GTV. Yep. I know there's an argument to be made that some people like for the camera to not be a character. You got to commit to one or the other. Either the camera's there
for sure,
or the camera's not there. In Lucha Underground, we understand that we are watching scenes where the guys don't know the camera's there. And that's fine because they stick to that. If they are not in the ring, then the characters don't know the camera's there. And that's fine. But WWE has this problem, especially on the main roster, where, and it's probably because of writer turnover, that some of them treat the camera is being there and like these characters have to be on their best behavior in front of the camera, or they act a different way in front of the camera. And some of them act like it's just a scene they're writing and this is happening and neither of them are supposed to know there's a camera in the room. So it's like, oh, we're the only two in the room. Oh, except the cameraman, but whatever, ignore him. Yeah, I really like that NXT has committed to the more realistic feel of this, and I feel like they're doing it better than any of the main shows have done, at least on a consistent basis. But we're kind of burying, I don't know, maybe this is the lead, but we're kind of burying TM61 here, and I thought that this was a decent, very real moment for them too. I don't know, you know, they say they're the Mighty Don't Kneel thing, and they set it up in such a, it's a non-organic way to get their to get their catchphrase out, but whatever.
You didn't think it was glorious?
but yeah, I like that maybe they're bringing this name back, because TM61 doesn't have any meaning to anybody. Like, they haven't really done a great job of explaining why it's TM61. But the Mighty Don't Kneel was a really, really great tech team name that I thought they were going to bring to this roster as well. But I like them selling the agony of defeat. I'm always a fan of that. And we'll see where they go from here. I feel like it really, really killed their momentum, especially since they didn't get like some small enhancement match to win their heat back. But anything on TM61 or the Ember Shayna saga?
If you want me to keep talking about the camera work in NXT, I can. I think that's That's all I've got for this.
The only stat that I'm going to pull up this week that I thought was interesting, Paige left NXT with a record of 20 wins and 3 losses, and Ember Moon is currently at a record of 19 wins and 3 losses.
All right.
So she's creeping up on her.
All right. So, and she really only ever lost to Asuka mostly. So.
Yeah, and then the one disqualification loss to Shayna due to Kairi's interference.
Can you guys hear my very loud cat? I'm very afraid. Okay.
That's the signal for wrap it up.
Yep, I have, they're like, hey, man, you had one chance at this, and we stayed quiet for that one.
Yeah, she was pretty good the first time. I have two cats. One is dead silent, and this one, Corporal Fuzzington, is the loud one.
I thought my cat's names were good, man.
Oh, yeah, Corporal Fuzzington. I giggled so hard when I thought of that one, I knew it was the right name. There you go. There you go. There's a little peek into my life. I got a cat named Corporal Fuzzington, everybody. She's a black cat, and she's in heat, and I need to...
Oh, boy, that explains it.
I need to shut her up somehow because my sleep is not happening anymore. So, all right, that is pretty much our show. Went on... You know, we always go on weird tangents. This one was a little different than the first time, but what are you going to do? Next week
probably
we got,
for the better.
It was even weirder last time, we promise. We got Lars Sullivan versus Killian Dane on tap next week. Big versus big doesn't usually catch my fancy, but I hazard to say I'm very excited about this match, see what they pull out. And we've got the Strong Dunn versus AOP main event. Otherwise, it is a go-home show. I don't know how much more hype they can wedge into this thing, because I'm already pretty psyched for TakeOver, but we'll see what they got up their sleeves. I am Kelly Wells. You can find me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. I almost never tweet, but if you tweet at me, I will respond. Always. Tom, go ahead.
And I am at Tom Staup, and I tweet sometimes too much.
and Harley.
And I'm on Twitter at Talking Honor, which is also the name of the other PW Torch podcast that I host.
All right. As always, we thank you for indulging us. It was a good show. Lots of moving parts today. We liked it so much, we had to talk about it twice. So we will see you next week for the Go Home show. And we'll see if we're able to get a post-takeover show in there. Two of our guys are going to be unavailable. But hopefully, me and Justin will be here with a post-takeover special for you. And we'll figure this out. So cheers, everyone.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, the Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Life.